Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm. We go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline and bring in John Costco from Pro Football Focus. John has supplied us with all kinds of good tidbits, etc., and it really covers the Browns for Pro Football Focus. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Nathan.
Good to have you, obviously. On Twitter, you guys can get him at PFF underscore John Costco. And John, let me ask you, because you guys have been very, very favorable about the Browns offseason. What is it about what the Browns have done this offseason that has made so much sense to the folks of Pro Football Focus?
Well, the main thing is that we really like their draft. They drafted 10 players that ranked inside of our top 120 on our big board, our final big board that we put out. And they were also able to get them in later rounds. Obviously, Jordan Payton in the fifth round, Spencer Drango, Richard Hart Higgins, and then even Scooby Wright in the seventh round. So they got a really good value for the later rounds. And while their free agency period, we initially gave them a D-plus for that because of the short-term impact it will have on losing Mitchell Schwartz, Alex Mack, Tayshaun Gibson, and Travis Benjamin being the main ones. How they've kept on compensatory picks for future drafts, and then also gaining more picks for future drafts. When taken as a whole for the long-term success of a program, they've done really well.
And I guess for a random fan out there thinking that an analytics-driven website like Pro Football Focus and an analytics-driven organization with Sashi Brown, Paul D. Podesta, is it about the quantity of players with 14, you said 10 of which in your top 20, but also the numbers with the production that these players have put on, with the sacks between Ogba and Schobert and Nassib, and also the touchdowns and receptions with Corey Coleman as well?
Yeah, it's a combination of all that. We highly valued the players they drafted because, A, they were very productive in college, and B, they showed it the skills that could translate to the tape. So it wasn't it wasn't all just production based, but when watching these guys on film, you could see that they had the talent. Corey Coleman, before his quarterback started going down to injury, was clearly the best wide receiver in all of college football last year. For the first 10 weeks, he averaged 5.41 yards per route run, which is a signature stat that we have. Every time he runs a route, how many yards is he gaining for the team on the play? Emmanuel Ogba, he was the guy that had most pressures of all 4-3 defensive ends, tied with Joey Bosa at 70. And even on a per-snap basis, he was able to affect the passer on 15.2% of his snaps, which is fourth best in the class. Colin Nassib, another guy that he didn't rush a quarterback as many times as Ogba, but on a per-snap basis, he was the best 4-3 defensive end in college football last year. And then a guy like even Joe Schobert, who they got in the fourth round, we had him as our number 74 overall, so they got him kind of for a steal there too. He's a guy that is a PFF favorite. In 2014, he was affecting the passer on one every three snaps. That dropped a little bit to just a little bit better than one every four snaps. But he had the best pass rushing productivity of all 3-4 defensive outside linebackers, better than the next best at Leonard Floyd in this draft. So you take it from a talent standpoint, on a production standpoint, all put together, they did really well.
Talking with John Costco from Pro Football Focus on the Ohio Business Machines hotline right now. John, one of the guys that you guys have some positive stats on that people hear, obviously, now that Hugh Jackson's kind of put a stamp on him, they're open to it. But what can you tell us about Cody Kessler and why you at Pro Football Focus believe maybe more than other services that he can be a successful quarterback in the NFL?
His accuracy, for one thing. I know Hugh Jackson has talked about his accuracy, and he can get it right where he wants to when he makes a decision, and it shows up in his stats. We charted all of the quarterbacks' passes this year and last year, but this year we went more in depth with it, where we were actually looking at the actual placement of the ball. And under 20 yards, he was the best in the class by a long shot. Once he started going beyond 20 yards, it did become he became more inaccurate, but His arm strength is okay. It's not great, but it can develop there. But even under pressure, Cody Kessler was the second best in 2014 at 71% accurate. He had a touchdown and interception ratio of 11-2. And then in 2015, it dropped a little bit, but still very good at 68.5% accurate with 7-3 touchdown interception ratio. But the only concern with Kessler really is arm strength and the deep passing. He took a pretty massive step back in terms of his accuracy from 2014 to 2015. He had 56.9% of his deep passes were accurate, and then dropped down to 37.5% in 2015. And he threw roughly the same number of deep passes. And you can attribute that to his arm strength or coaching changes or whatnot, but if Hugh Jackson's able to tailor his system to him, keeping him under 20 yards and then taking, your periodic deep shots, he could be very successful.
That's right. You're absolutely right. And I think some of the weapons that the Cleveland Browns have added, well beyond just Corey Coleman, are obviously, Ricardo Lewis, Jordan Payton, and also the Higgins kid out of Colorado State. Of the three of those, beyond Corey Coleman, which do you think can make the most immediate impact? And then of the three, which do you think will ultimately become the best professional wide receiver?
We like Rashard Higgins. I personally, he was, one of my favorite wide receivers in the draft. We ranked him at 40th overall out of all the prospects. And so he was, getting him in the fifth round at 172 was a massive steal. In 2014, he graded better than any wide receiver in college football, and that beat out Amari Cooper from last year and Tyler Lockett. And then this year, he took a step back in terms of his grade, but that was, you can attribute that to a new coach. His head coach had gone off to Florida, and then Garrett Grayson, his quarterback, was drafted in the third round. But he's still very productive in 2015, and his route running is just, was probably the best in all of college football. So smooth. He was able to set up defenders, making his break right on the right point where he's out leveraging the defensive back. And then an underrated part of his game is his ability to catch short passes and break them for long gains.
Yeah. John, one of the things you've looked at and you shared with me and I shared it with our audience was talking about when we had Ray Horton in here talking about the increased pressure up the middle for using his linebackers to blitz, something that we haven't seen here as much in the last regime. What are some of the key kind of numbers that you look at from a scheme differentiating standpoint with Hugh Jackson on offense and Ray Horton on defense that you think are really going to help the Browns?
Well, on offense, Hugh Jackson will have a quick passing game and utilize quick decisions instead of last year where McCown and Johnny Manziel were one of the lowest, the slowest times of throws, and while Hugh Jackson was the quickest with Andy Dalton. So he'll bring a much more quick passing game to the Browns that will help just from a schematic point, doing that. And then he also, it's evident that he utilizes his players to the best of their ability. He doesn't put them in situations that they can't, if the offensive line is unable to do certain types of power scheme. The power scheme seemed to work better for the Browns last year when they
right.
utilized it. So he brings them to that. He's not going to be doing the zone schemes on run blocking. And then on the defensive side, Ray Horton has been known to, like you said, adjust to his players. You look at last year, I think the tweet was about the inside linebackers were rushing out of 12% clip for the Browns last year. And then Horton's defense, they were almost double at 22%. And even back you go to Arizona, they're at close to 30% rushing their inside linebackers. So if he wants to utilize good pass rushing inside linebackers, a guy like Scooby Wright in 2014 when he was healthy, 14 sacks, 7 hits, and 27 hurries rushing the passer from an inside linebacker position. So utilizing those guys correctly, another guy like Paul Kruger, he rushed the passer almost 100 times fewer in 2014 than he did. In 2015 than he did in 2014. And but even though he rushed fewer times, he was still able to get pressure on the quarterback. It just didn't result in sacks. So utilizing him to get into the pass rushing more will result in more sacks. Hopefully, a better outcome for the defense.
Absolutely. And just to stay on the defense side of the ball, Emmanuel Ogbah and Nassib are two guys that obviously have played as defensive ends and will play different positions in their upcoming seasons. And a lot of people talk about the 4-3, 3-4 transition. Just name a couple names of guys in the case of Emmanuel Ogbah who played defensive end in a 4-3 and made the transition to a 3-4 that were very productive in their rookie season.
Well, somebody like Terrell Suggs. He was a bigger guy, that was being compared to even Joey Bosa this year. And Joey Bosa was being, everybody's saying, oh, the Browns aren't going to draft Joey Bosa because he's a 4-3 defensive end. I think if Bosa would have been there at 8 and they wanted to take him, they would have taken him because obviously they're not looking at pigeonholing players into what they used to play.
Sure.
But Terrell Suggs is a guy that developed into a 3-4 outside linebacker. Early in his career, he was putting his hand in the dirt, and he was still very productive, obviously, for the Baltimore Ravens. That's a guy that just jumps off the screen for me that I'm doing.
If
guy
we can
who's able
get
to
that,
make the transition.
Yeah, if we can get that, that would be amazing from Emmanuel Ogbah,
yes.
What T. Sizzle has been for the Baltimore Ravens. John, is there anybody when you look at this roster that last year maybe you think could be poised to make a bigger jump this year? They did things well, increased opportunity, and they might be able to take advantage, or somebody that maybe wasn't as appreciated as you thought perhaps they should have been?
Well, I think some of the rookies from last year have a good opportunity to make a leap. Even a guy like Danny Shelton, he struggled early on in the year, and then once he started figuring out the NFL size and getting better technique, he was able to start stopping the run like he was brought in to do. And with Horton coming in here too, he should be able to move him around a little bit more. When we evaluated him coming out of college, we thought the worst thing that could happen to him is to pigeonhole him at the nose tackle position, because he's so much better when he can have a little bit more freedom to move along, across the line of scrimmage or the offensive line techniques. Another guy, even Terrell Pryor, I know that you've been talking about him a lot lately because he's making that transition. It's no longer really a transition for him. He's got if he can make the roster and he shows that being able to figure out the position, he's a guy obviously has the size, the speed, the athleticism that you'd be able to be a contributor like a Mohamed Sanu was for the Bengals last year in the backfield, taking the handoffs and stuff like that. So those are two guys that I think have a real good opportunity to improve their game.
Certainly, I would agree with you as well. John, we appreciate the time. Keep the great stuff coming. At PFF underscore John, J-O-H-N, Costco, K-O-S-K-O. Keep bringing the great stuff, and we appreciate your insights, and we'll talk to you again this offseason.
All right, thanks. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Thank you.
All right, thank you. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Cleveland Browns Daily still to come. The Friday forecast. Oh, yeah. Friday forecast. Perhaps the return of the kid. The kid might care enough to grace us with his presence today. What a great treat for us, man.
We'll see.
We'll see. Yeah, the jury's still out. We'll be back with more right after this. Oh, don't you dare look back. Just keep your eyes on me. I said you're holding back. She said shut up and dance with me. This woman is my destiny. She said ooh, shut up and dance with me. Aren't you going to at least say burn after that? I just got burned epically by Matt Wilhelm. Burn. All right, we're back. Nathan's going to Matt Wilhelm. Let's go to the phones real quickly. Before we have the Friday forecast, Lynn in Cleveland, welcome to the show. What's up, Lynn?
Hi, Nathan, Matt. How are you?
Good. How are you?
You know what? You got an awesome show. I listen
Thank
to you.
You
every day.
I really appreciate that.
You put online. I mean, you guys are great. I'm excited about the Browns. I really am. I really think that they're going to take a couple steps forward this year with the mentality of what Hugh has in terms of his attitude, his energy, and his discipline of, you know, you got to give it all and come every day with it. And it's exciting to be in Cleveland now, the Monsters and the Cavs. And,
that's
you
right.
know, I think that it's just great. The one question I have for you is, I like the Cody Kessler pick. I like his accuracy and his interceptions versus touchdowns. Is it possible to put him on a program where they strengthen his arm considerably and that gives him the opportunity to get stronger downfield instead of, you know, the pass is just within 20 yards? Like to hear your comment on that, and have a very nice Memorial Day weekend.
Thank you. You too, and we certainly appreciate that. Matt, this is, and you tell me if from your experience, but I know one guy that they said has significantly improved his arm strength since coming in to the National Football League was Drew Brees.
Yes.
So how much of a difference can be made, I guess, is the question.
I know Drew Brees, obviously playing with him in San Diego and then working out with him at Fitness Quest 10, which is a small elite gym in the San Diego area, which I believe Drew also has a home in San Diego as well as in New Orleans, and spends a lot of his offseason there. And the one thing I can say is Drew Brees and what has made him great for the decade since he left San Diego is his work ethic. He is dedicated to his craft. It is no jokes. He is meticulous. It is repetitious. Every day there are things that he's doing to take care of his body, his shoulders, his elbows to increase that strength or
yep.
maintain that strength. That's the best I can say. And I think that what he does on the football field is a direct reflection of his work ethic, of how meticulous he is to his training to have him in shape. And I think it's a great thing to see. Now, I don't necessarily know if Hugh Jackson and his staff here would give something, to Cody Kessler to do. They'll do their best. But these guys have to be concerned about winning and winning in 2016 and guiding 52 other men, not just Cody and his arm.
Right.
So he's going to be dedicated, maybe with Pep, working with Pep personally on some drills, or Pep giving the recommendation of what he can do in the offseason to gain that strength.
Yeah, and I think that's something. And when you have guys like Adam Beard here and that whole performance team, and they can analyze the mechanics and figure out how to get the absolute maximum out of what he got, you do feel like at least you have an opportunity here with these guys to get that. And hopefully it can happen. And the truth of the matter is you only throw down the field so many times a game, but if he can improve his arm strength and if he can get to the point where he makes those throws comfortably and teams do have to respect that, it's nothing but a good thing for him and for the Cleveland Browns, obviously, going forward. So that's something that you just want to keep an eye on. And he's not going to go from Cody Kessler's arm to Jay Cutler's arm. That's not going to happen, but it's improving the functionality of what he can do.
You're right. And I think the most encouraging thing to me about this, and I said this multiple times about whatever quarterback it was that we drafted, if we drafted a quarterback, the biggest plus is that this individual and Hugh Jackson are entering into this Cleveland Browns era together.
Yep.
Cody Kessler standing next to Hugh Jackson, learning from Hugh Jackson, and Hugh Jackson learning from Cody Kessler what he can do and what he can't do. Because in 2 years, when RG3 potentially is gone, Josh McCown's no longer here, and maybe the reins are turned over to Cody Kessler, this offense may look slightly different than it has, either in Cincinnati or even in the prior 2 years, because Hugh Jackson's going to customize the offense to the skill set of Cody Kessler. What does he do best? If he doesn't, you have to throw the football down the field in the NFL.
Yep.
But there are routes or route combinations or things that he may struggle with that he's only going to get so much better at. Over the course of his career. So let's focus on what he does very well. And that's, as we just heard from John, 20 yards and in, his decision-making. And as you said, you only throw it down the field so much. You got to take those shots to keep people honest. But if he's giving you 75% underneath and he's 50-50 or, 55% throwing the football down the field, you'll take that. Because you'll win a lot of football games.
A ton, right. Being accurate in the short and intermediate, but getting that little bit of extra arm strength perhaps to be able to get through there and get, into those tight windows.
You've got to push through the windows, exactly.
Yeah, going to be very, very effective. All right, when we come back, the kid will join us for Friday Forecast here on CBD. Welcome back to CBD. It's time for the Friday Forecast, but I believe it's possible that the kid has chosen to once again be a part of our show. The kid, are you there?
Live and in color.
Whoa, hey now.
Hey now, the kid. What made you want to come back to us after all this time away?
I missed you guys. I couldn't stay away.
Yeah.
We hope you don't take such a long hiatus again. It was hurtful to our feelings.
Been busy. Summertime, you know, playing daddy duty today. Otherwise, I'd have been in studio. Here I am.
All right.
That's all we can ask for.
That's all we can ask for. Eazy-E, come on in here and let us know what's going on the Friday Forecast.
All right. I got you guys. Let me start a little football music, even though I have zero football questions here today. So we'll start with number one. So with Memorial Day weekend right around the corner, what are you guys doing this weekend for Memorial Day?
Well, I myself doing a lot of family stuff, doing a little bit of golf. Hopefully we can dodge some raindrops and get two rounds in. And other than that, some barbecuing, some pooling, and hopefully not going to a game 7 on Sunday. Hopefully the Cavs can close it out tonight.
I'm doing the same. We'll reunite our Tampa trip group with Rusty in town. Agent to the Stars, Andrew Sims. So looking forward to a little golf. Obviously spent a lot of time with my kids and getting out to the pool, which opens up this weekend. For a lot of people's pools will open. So we hope to be out there, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've laid it out tonight, out and about with the wife, kids with my mom and dad. So we'll be able to sleep in and do whatever we want tonight, which is always great. Tomorrow, Kelly's Island for a birthday party. Sunday, I believe we're entertaining at our house, so that should be great. Barbecue pools will be in effect. And I hope Monday may be the day. And if I have to do it early, I will, but I finally get to hit the links for the first time.
Yes, and I told him we got to get a date for – we need a date for our dinner, and we need a date for Dr. Kurt.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, yeah, you guys will come. We'll come your way, and you guys can come our way.
Home and home.
For sure. Let's do it.
All right, so also in light of Memorial Day, I feel like, you know, you always get around some friends and family or whatnot and play some backyard games. So with that said, what is your favorite backyard game?
Oh, that's easy for me.
You know, I'm not really a backyard game type of guy unless there's some significant gambling involved. I guess I would maybe go with, I don't really even know what I'd horseshoes maybe. I enjoy a game of horseshoes.
Horseshoes?
Yeah, I like horseshoes.
When's the last time you played horseshoes?
Probably about 20 years ago.
That's classic.
I was going to say, in all the times I've known you and all the backyards that you and I have been in together, I have never once seen you with horseshoes.
Yeah. I'm not really a backyard type of, you know, I mean, back in the day, you know, basketball, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I would say.
I'd love to see you on a basketball court, by the way.
That would be comical.
That would be amazing.
I'm going to say, I mean, living in a cul-de-sac, we have the luxury of no traffic. And if the neighbor kids are up for it, and when we have people over on Sunday, we had an epic wiffle ball game going on.
Ooh.
You know, which is strong. I know it's not backyard. It's technically front yard or front street. But I'll say I enjoy cornhole. I do play some horseshoes. But the one reason I shy away from cornhole is if you get the guy that plays, like, ridiculous cornhole, like, enters every tournament and is like a full-on ringer, like just throwing them in, and the game's over in like two turns. That's not fun to me because it's me. It's recreational. I play once, five times a summer. You play five times a week. Okay, sure. Congrats on your win.
I enjoy cornhole as well, and I play. I'm kind of in the middle of those two.
Yeah, I'm in the middle.
You described.
I'm a muscle memory guy, so once
yeah.
I get it down,
yeah.
I'm on the board or I'm in the hole.
Yeah,
but I'm not in the hole. I'm not that guy.
No. No, those guys are few and far between, but it is they have mastered that skill. But cornhole is easily the best backyard game as far as I'm concerned.
All right, so moving on to a little hoops. OKC holds a 3-2 lead over the Warriors, with the Warriors getting a win last night in the Western Conference Finals. With that being said, who you guys got in this series?
OKC, no question about it. I was very, I figured Golden State would win last night. They weren't able to give them the knockout blow. OKC did not play well and still hung around. I just think it's a better matchup, and frankly, right now, I think they're a better team. And I know it's blasphemy to say, but Russ Westbrook is better than Stephen Curry. So if you're better than their best player, and then you got Durant to go along with it, I think this one's over tomorrow.
Russ, do you feel, though, that this is Game 7? This is, in effect, Game 7, that if the Warriors win, it's over?
No, I don't think so. I think that Golden says that OKC could have won last night. The only game they really got blown out, they did get blown out of Game 2. But, no, I think OKC can win. In the playoffs, I think home court is a little bit overrated. Even though in the Cavs series it hasn't been. For the most part, when you have two good teams playing, anybody could win anywhere.
Wilhelm?
I think if it goes back to Golden State, I'm going to say it's over. I said it early. I just believe that there's a mystique about the Warriors and what they accomplished last year and confidence that they have in that building. I think that the 70-some wins that they had this year didn't happen by accident. And I just have, I guess, based on past history, I have faith in Steph Curry with the ball in his hands in the fourth quarter a little bit more than I do Russ after what I've seen of the series this year so far.
I think the Thunder get it done. I think Russ gets it done. But if it goes back to Golden State, I don't think the Thunder are going to win in Golden State if it goes back there. I think that environment will be too much. The momentum will be too much. But I think they win it in six. I think they've got to. To me, that's Game 7. Quite frankly, whoever wins Saturday night's winning that series. But I believe it will be the Thunder.
All right, last one, guys. Call your shot tonight, Cavs or Raptors?
I'm going to say, and I had a premonition, we've got this three-year email chain going with some of my high school friends, and I threw it out there last night, and I'll throw it out there for the public right now. Kyrie Irving at the buzzer, series over, game over, drive home safe.
Wow. Okay. I think it's going to be a grind. I think it's going to be like, I think it's game four, second half. When they went back and forth, I just think if the Cavs can come out and not allow the Raptors get up early as they have in both games up in Toronto and having to fight back, I don't think that plays well in the Cavs' hands where they have to hit those threes. I think in a back and forth, I'll rely on LeBron, Kyrie, or Kevin Love to make the plays necessary late in the fourth quarter to win the basketball game. And I'll say 5-point victory tonight.
I think the Cavs win. I just think that at some point, especially if they can just come out and be dominant early, that Toronto's just going to know they're the inferior team. They just got to get out to a lead, which I think they will, and I do think that they win. And I think they win. I think it'll be tight, but in the end, the final score will be greater than 10. The difference.
God, I hope you're right and I'm not, but wouldn't it be glorious for the modern-day Mamba to win it at the buzzer?
The modern-day Mamba?
That's what I call Kyrie. He's the new-age Kobe Bryant.
He's the new-age Kobe Bryant. Explain.
I mean, he's fearless offensively. He's not afraid to take anybody anytime, and I just have so much confidence when the ball leaves his hand that it's going in. He's a scorer.
Kobe Bryant, he's got a long way to go before he's even mentioned in the same sentence as Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant started off as the 1A to Shaq, won a couple championships, and then slowly became the 1. He does have a long way to go, let's be clear. But he is a Kobe Bryant disciple. They're very close, and I do think he has the right mindset. He's the guy that thinks he can score on anybody. And I think that he's going to, as time continues, LeBron's going to morph into even more of a Magic Johnson role. And Kyrie, you're going to just see score at will.
I think there's still some maturity, though, we need to see out of Kyrie, because they're the same way that he can score at will. He could turn that basketball over and make bad decisions, three, four times up the court in a row. And I don't like that about his game at this point.
Yeah, well, when he starts pounding the ball, I don't like that at all.
Agree.
But If he's going to go, I don't mind him going one-on-one, but just go. You know,
right.
Don't sit there for 10 seconds and then go. Just go. I agree that he does have some maturity coming his way, but, boy, I like the way he bounced back from that 3-for-19. He didn't, you know, he just came right out. And, you know, he's not, like, I think Kevin Love is a little fragile. Like, Kevin Love, if he doesn't
yes.
take the first shot,
I agree.
Then he's in the tank. Kyrie is not going to be in the tank. He's going down guns a-blazing.
Do you believe that Channing Frye then is the new big shot Bob?
Yeah, I mean, he does play that role. I actually think he's a – to be honest with you, I think Ori did some other things better than Frye, but I think Frye is a – now, he hasn't hit the big shots yet, but he's a better shooter than big shot Bob. I mean, percentage-wise, he's the number one shooter in the NBA at open threes.
Channing Frye?
Yeah.
Certainly seems that way.
Yep.
All right.
And he's good at only shooting. He doesn't take many forced ones.
Well, he's open all the time.
Yeah, but when he's not, he makes a nice little move to the hoop. I like his all-around game. And you were all over his defense, and then the other night he made a couple of good defensive plays.
Good blocks. I said he's not a rebounder. That's why at the end of that game, Biombo got those offensive rebounds. He can't be your top rebounder on the floor. That's not his role.
No, but every once in a while he can be out there as your center.
Okay. All right, what else you got, EZ?
That's it. That's all I got.
That's it? That's all you got?
I'm tapping out.
Triumphant return today for you, the kid. Do you have any final words for our audience?
I think I threw it all out there, the modern-day Mamba at the buzzer. I'm going to leave you with that thought.
All right, well.
Mind blown.
It's tough for me to continue on with that. Yeah. Mind blown. All right, well, we're going to hopefully see you out on the links then.
Yes, you will.
All right, kid. Always a pleasure. The kid, everybody. Welcome back, the kid. The kid. Welcome back. About time, finally. Good to have you. Nice to see you. All right, when we come back, final thoughts here on this Friday before Memorial Day weekend. We certainly hope everybody has a great, great weekend, and we'll wrap up our show with our final thoughts right after this. All right, welcome back. Wrapping it up here on this Friday. The Browns will be back, and we'll be back on Tuesday of next week as the Browns return for OTA number 7, last week of OTAs before they go ahead and get into the mandatory mini camp, which will be their final team activities before they take off for the summer, before returning in late July for training camp. And it certainly is going to be a couple more weeks where they really have an opportunity to get in there and they can get in this good work and get where Hugh Jackson wants them to be before they come in. And if you're a player, this is an opportunity to show your mastery of kind of the new content, basically, since you're relearning a new playbook, and also to try to stack yourself the way you want to be headed into training camp. Because when you get into training camp, then that's when you're really getting down to what are our lineups going to be when we open up the season? What's the depth chart going to be? Who's going to make this team? And this is an important time to be able to slot yourself in there.
No, there's no doubt. And I think, you know, how many guys stay in Cleveland? This is well beyond just the next 2 weeks. How many guys, you know, reside in the area, are still in and out of the building? The same way that Danny Shelton was prior to OTAs and phase one starting. Danny, you know, went back to Washington, saw his family, but made the commitment to get here, started losing weight. We heard him doing the MMA and so on and so forth, got his weight down, and is now being praised by his coaches for what he's doing on the football field. Going to be used differently as well, at least that's coming out of Danny's mouth. And I think he's a great example of someone who's committed after understanding the NFL game. And now the rookies will have to learn off the cuff. But I think, you know, the first two round one draft picks of last year, I think Danny Shelton and Cam Irving, they're both going to be the centerpiece of our offense at nose tackle and, of course, at center.
Yep.
They look to rebound, and I think Danny's done well. I think what we've heard from Cam, coming from, you know, the comments by the offensive coaches on his ability to play physical, to do whatever he can without pads, to show them that he's grasping his opportunity there at center. Impacts need to be made, and I think that's something Hugh Jackson really wants to do over the next 2 weeks is find his impact makers, because when the pads come on, it's going to be different. Someone who's shining in shorts, not going to be so shiny once the pads come on if they can't adapt to the physicality that the National Football League game brings to them.
It's amazing what a difference it is, but it truly
is the equalizer. It's the equalizer. You can run and jump as fast as you can. Can you run and jump getting hit in midair and still catch the football?
That's the question.
That's the question.
Yeah.
Those that can will make it. Those that can't, will either be on practice squad or will not be in a Cleveland Browns uniform.
It's going to be an exciting time that begins again Tuesday. We'll be back with you with Cleveland Browns Daily. The Browns will be back in Berea for OTA number 7. We want to say thank you to everybody who called up and everybody who listened today. We want to thank each and every one of our service members who have served our country and those who have given their lives for our great country and our freedoms here and abroad on this
Memorial
Day.
You are the real
Day.
Heroes.
Absolutely. No question about it. Want to thank all of you for listening. And yes, have a great, happy, healthy, safe Memorial Day holiday weekend. Enjoy some time with your families, and we'll be back on Tuesday. I want to thank John Costco for being with us. Thank the kid for being with us again. Welcome back, the kid.
Thank Eazy-E.
Thank Eazy-E with the quick trigger for being with us on the board as well. For Matt Wilhelm and Eazy-E, I am Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to another edition of Cleveland Browns Daily
on ESPN 850 WKNR.